Elijah and the Prophets of Baal, the Contest on Mount Carmel. Chapter 1, A Land in Crisis. The sun blazed mercilessly over the land of Israel, its golden rays now more a curse than a blessing. For 3 years the heavens had shut their doors, and no rain had fallen. The once fertile fields were cracked and barren, rivers dried to dust, and the people were hungry. Livestock, crops, and hope withered beneath the unrelenting drought that had seized the land. King Ahab, the ruler of Israel, looked over his kingdom with despair. He knew the cause of the drought, the prophet Elijah. 3 years earlier, Elijah had stood before him, a wild figure clothed in rough garments, eyes alight with divine fire, and declared, "As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives whom I serve, there will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years, except at my word." Elijah's word had come true. The people, already steeped in apostasy, had turned further away from Yahweh under the influence of Queen Jezebel, the daughter of the king of Sidon. Jezebel had brought the worship of Baal, the storm god of fertility and rain, into the heart of Israel. Baal's prophets, with the support of the queen, had risen to power, and the worship of Yahweh had been overshadowed. Many of Yahweh's prophets had been slaughtered by Jezebel's hand, and those who survived lived in hiding. The drought was not just a natural disaster, it was a divine judgment, a contest between Yahweh and Baal. But now, after 3 years of silence, the word of the Lord came again to Elijah. "Go, present yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain on the land." Chapter 2, Elijah confronts Ahab. Elijah was no stranger to danger. He had spent the last 3 years living as a fugitive, first hiding by the brook Cherith, where ravens fed him bread and meat, and then in Zarephath, sustained by a widow's miraculous jar of flour and jug of oil. But now it was time for him to confront the powers of Israel head on, and so he made his way to Samaria, the capital city, to meet King Ahab. Obadiah, the king's palace administrator, met Elijah along the way. Obadiah was a devout follower of Yahweh, secretly protecting 100 prophets by hiding them in caves. When he saw Elijah, he bowed low. "Is it really you, my lord Elijah?" Obadiah asked, a mixture of relief and fear in his voice. "It is I," Elijah replied. "Go tell your master, Elijah is here." Obadiah hesitated, his face pale. "What have I done wrong that you are handing your servant over to Ahab to be put to death? Don't you know that Ahab has sent men to search for you in every kingdom and nation? What if the Spirit of the Lord carries you away when I leave? Then when I tell Ahab and he can't find you, he will kill me." But Elijah reassured him, "As the Lord Almighty lives, whom I serve, I will surely present myself to Ahab today." Obadiah went to find Ahab, and soon the king himself appeared, a mixture of anger and frustration on his face. When he saw Elijah, he shouted, "Is that you, you troubler of Israel?" "I have not made trouble for Israel," Elijah retorted, "but you and your father's family have. You have abandoned the Lord's commands and have followed the Baals. Now summon the people from all over Israel to meet me on Mount Carmel, and bring the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table." Ahab could hardly refuse the bold prophet's challenge. He ordered the people of Israel to gather on Mount Carmel, a majestic mountain that jutted into the Mediterranean Sea, a place long associated with divine encounters. Chapter 3, The Contest Begins. The sun was high in the sky when the people of Israel gathered on the slopes of Mount Carmel. The air was heavy with anticipation as Elijah stood alone, facing the assembled throngs. Before him were the 450 prophets of Baal, resplendent in their ornate robes and gaudy jewelry, representing the god who was supposed to control the weather. Beside them stood the prophets of Asherah, the mother goddess, equally confident in their power. Elijah's voice rang out across the mountainside. "How long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him, but if Baal is God, follow him." The people said nothing, torn between the two paths. Many of them had been led astray by Jezebel's influence, but still remembered the god of their ancestors. Yet the silence was palpable, a reflection of their internal conflict. Elijah continued, I am the only one of the Lord's prophets left, but Baal has 450 prophets. Get two bulls for us. Let Baal's prophets choose one for themselves, and let them cut it into pieces and put it on the wood, but not set fire to it. I will prepare the other bull and put it on the wood, but not set fire to it. Then you call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of the Lord. The God who answers by fire, he is God. The people, now curious, agreed. What you say is good, they murmured. Elijah gestured to the prophets of Baal. Choose one of the bulls and prepare it first, since there are so many of you. Call on the name of your God, but do not light the fire. The prophets of Baal eagerly took up the challenge. They slaughtered the bull and laid it on the altar they had constructed. Then, with great fanfare, they began to call on Baal. O Baal, answer us, they cried out, their voices echoing across the mountain. They danced around the altar, shouting and pleading with their God to send fire from the heavens. Hours passed, and still, nothing happened. The sun climbed higher in the sky, and the heat became oppressive, yet Baal remained silent. The prophets began to grow frantic. They danced wildly, leaping and spinning, their bodies glistening with sweat. They shouted louder, their voices becoming hoarse from their cries. But still, there was no response. At noon, Elijah could no longer contain himself. He began to mock them. Shout louder, he taunted. Surely he is a god. Perhaps he is deep in thought, or busy, or traveling. Maybe he is sleeping and must be awakened. The prophets of Baal, desperate to prove Elijah wrong, redoubled their efforts. They shouted louder, and in a frenzied display of devotion, began to slash themselves with swords and spears, as was their custom, until their blood flowed freely. The sight was gruesome, but it did nothing to move Baal. By mid-afternoon, the prophets were exhausted, their voices barely more than whispers, their bodies battered and bloodied. But still, there was no answer. Baal had not spoken, and no fire had fallen from the sky. Chapter 4, Elijah's Turn. Finally, as the evening approached, Elijah called the people to him. He walked calmly to the altar of the Lord that had been torn down and began to rebuild it, stone by stone. He took 12 stones, one for each of the tribes descended from Jacob, and constructed an altar in the name of the Lord. Then he dug a trench around it, large enough to hold several gallons of water. Once the altar was ready, Elijah arranged the wood on top of it and cut the bull into pieces, placing them on the wood. But Elijah was not done. He wanted to make it clear that there was no trickery involved in what was about to happen. Fill 4 large jars with water, he commanded, and pour it on the offering and on the wood. The people watched in amazement as the water was poured over the altar, soaking the wood in the sacrifice. Elijah ordered them to do it again, and then a third time, until the water ran down around the altar and filled the trench. The stage was set. Elijah stepped back and lifted his hands to the sky. Then he prayed, his voice strong and sure. O Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known today that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and have done all these things at your command. Answer me, O Lord, answer me, so these people will know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you are turning their hearts back again. The words had barely left his lips when the fire of the Lord fell from heaven. It blazed down upon the altar, consuming the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, and even the water in the trench. The people gasped in awe as the fire raged and then disappeared, leaving nothing but scorched earth behind. For a moment, there was silence. Then, as one, the people fell to the ground, faces pressed into the dirt. The Lord, he is God! The Lord, he is God! They cried, their voices filled with reverence and fear. Chapter 5, A Cleansing and a Promise of Rain. Elijah turned to the people, his face stern. Seize the prophets of Baal, he commanded. Do not let anyone get away. The people obeyed, capturing the 450 prophets of Baal, who stood in stunned silence. These men who had once held such power and influence over the people were now reduced to trembling captives. Elijah led them down to the Kishon Valley, where the judgment of God fell swiftly and fiercely upon them. There at the brook, Elijah put them to the sword, cleansing the land of their wickedness. The prophets of Baal, who had defied the God of Israel and led the nation into idolatry, were no more. The people, still shaken from the miraculous display of divine fire on Mount Carmel, watched in silence. They had seen with their own eyes the undeniable power of Yahweh, and the fear of God had gripped their hearts. No longer would they waver between two opinions. They had declared it aloud, "The Lord, He is God." Now it was time for Israel to turn back to the true and living God, casting aside the false deities that had led them astray. When the judgment was complete, Elijah turned his gaze toward King Ahab. The king had witnessed everything, yet he had said nothing as the prophets of Baal were executed. Now, with the sun sinking low on the horizon and the heat of the day beginning to subside, Elijah approached him. "Go, eat and drink," Elijah said, "for there is the sound of a heavy rain." Ahab, exhausted from the day's events and perhaps desperate to avoid further confrontation, obeyed without question. He returned to his camp and sat down to a meal. But Elijah did not join him. Instead, the prophet climbed back to the summit of Mount Carmel, where he knelt down on the ground, placing his face between his knees in fervent prayer. The contest with Baal was over, but Elijah knew that his work was not yet done. The drought that had plagued the land for 3 long years had not yet been lifted. The people had repented, and the false prophets had been judged. But now it was time for the Lord to fulfill his promise and send rain upon the earth. Elijah prayed with all his heart, his faith unwavering. After a time, Elijah called his servant to him. "Go and look toward the sea," he instructed. The servant hurried to the edge of the mountain and gazed out over the vast expanse of the Mediterranean. The sky was still clear without a cloud in sight. The servant returned to Elijah and reported, "There is nothing there." Elijah was not discouraged. He knew that God was faithful to his word. "Go back," he told his servant. The servant went again and returned with the same report. "Nothing." 6 times Elijah sent him, and 6 times the servant returned with the same answer. No sign of rain, no clouds, only the same relentless drought that had gripped the land for so long. But Elijah persisted in prayer. He knew that the 7th time would be different, for God always completed his work. When the servant returned on his 7th trip, his eyes were wide with surprise and excitement. "A cloud as small as a man's hand is rising from the sea," the servant exclaimed. Elijah's heart leapt with joy. Though it was a small cloud, it was the beginning of a great miracle. "Go and tell Ahab," Elijah said quickly. "Hitch up your chariot and go down before the rain stops you." The servant ran to deliver the message, while Elijah remained on the mountaintop, watching as the sky began to change. The small cloud grew larger and darker, spreading across the heavens until the entire sky was covered in thick black storm clouds. The wind began to howl, stirring up dust and leaves, and the air smelled of rain for the first time in years. Elijah stood tall, feeling the cool breeze on his face, knowing that the heavens were about to open. And then it came. A mighty downpour swept across the land, the rain falling in torrents, drenching the earth that had long been parched. Rivers that had run dry began to flow again, and the ground, cracked and thirsty, soaked up the life-giving water. The people rejoiced as the long-awaited rain fell from the sky, a sign that God's anger had been appeased and that He had heard their cries of repentance. Chapter 6. A Supernatural Endurance. As the rain fell, Ahab hitched up his chariot and began his journey back to Jezreel, a city located in the fertile valley east of Mount Carmel. He would need to return quickly if he wanted to avoid being trapped in the storm, for the roads would soon become muddy and treacherous. But Elijah, filled with the power of the Lord, was not finished yet. The hand of the Lord came upon Elijah, and in a remarkable display of divine strength, he tucked his cloak into his belt and ran ahead of Ahab's chariot all the way to Jezreel, a distance of about 20 miles. Though Ahab had horses pulling his chariot, Elijah, propelled by the Spirit of God, ran faster than any man should be able to run. It was a supernatural feat, a sign that God's favor rested on him. As Elijah ran, the rain poured down, soaking the land and quenching the thirst of the people. It was a new beginning for Israel, a moment when they had turned back to their God, and He had responded with mercy and grace. The contest on Mount Carmel had ended with a decisive victory for Yahweh, the one true God, and the prophets of Baal had been defeated once and for all. Chapter 7, Jezebel's Wrath and Elijah's Escape. But even as the rain fell and the people celebrated, Elijah knew that the battle was not yet over. Though Ahab had witnessed the power of God, his heart was still swayed by Jezebel, his wife, who had led Israel into Baal worship. When Jezebel heard that Elijah had killed all the prophets of Baal, she was furious. Her influence over the kingdom was far-reaching, and she would not allow this challenge to her authority to go unanswered. Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah with a dire threat. "May the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them." Elijah, exhausted from the day's events and knowing the ferocity of Jezebel's vengeance, felt a wave of fear and despair wash over him. Though he had just seen the mighty hand of God at work, the threat of death weighed heavily on his heart. He fled for his life, traveling into the wilderness, far from the reach of Jezebel's agents. Collapsing under a broom tree, Elijah prayed that his life might end. "I have had enough, Lord," he said. "Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors." Then he lay down under the tree and fell asleep, his spirit crushed by the weight of his mission. But God, ever merciful and compassionate, was not finished with Elijah. An angel appeared, touching him and saying, "Get up and eat." Elijah awoke to find a cake of bread, baked over hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank, then lay down again, his exhaustion deep. The angel returned a second time, urging him to eat once more, for the journey ahead was long and difficult. Strengthened by the food, Elijah traveled for 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. There, in a cave, Elijah sought refuge, waiting for the Lord to speak to him again. Though the contest on Mount Carmel had been a great victory, Elijah's mission was far from complete. There were still battles to be fought, enemies to be faced, and a people who needed to fully return to their God. But for now, the rain fell, the land was renewed, and Elijah had seen the hand of God in a way few men ever would. He had stood alone against an entire nation, called down fire from heaven, and witnessed the power of God turning the hearts of his people back to him. Though the path ahead was uncertain, Elijah knew that he served a God who would never abandon him, even in his darkest hour.